Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull. That's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Anne-Marie O'Dwyer, chatting all things the psychiatry of cancer.
I want to say that it's very common to be very distressed, to have a very prominent psychological response to cancer, that they are not alone, that lots of other people feel in that way, and that it's important for them to have information. Information is power, but it has to be the right information.
As ever, we're available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to another Throw In Hurling Show with John Milan and super sub Frank Roach, who is stepping in for Eddie Brennan this week. I'm Michael Verney, and there's plenty to talk about this week, with Wexford maintaining their unbeaten start to the season, the Green Machine Limerick rolling on again, and Clare booking their league semi-final place. John, I'm going to start with you. You were at, it was probably the game of the weekend, Wexford and Waterford. Just talk me through it. It looked like Waterford had got themselves in a winning position, but unfortunately it's three defeats in a row for Waterford now, and they're going to be down in Division 1B. But we'll just start with Wexford. Like, an amazing start to the season, really, under Keith Rosser. They win the Walsh Cup, you know, three draws in a row in the league, and then a big win yesterday, securing their place in Division 1A for next year.
Yeah, they were unbelievable yesterday. Look, they were slow out of the blocks. First 10-12 minutes, I think they were, 6 points to zero down. It could be 5 points to zero or 6 points to zero down before they started to get their act together. But you know, when they got into their groove, they were full value for their win yesterday. And you could see, you know, in the aftermath, what it meant to them. You know, just down below me, their chairman, Micheál Martin, he leapt out of his chair, you know, two fists in the air, as you say, you know, brilliant. We were after securing Division 1A status for 2025. But for me, I really, really enjoyed what Wexford brought to the table yesterday. I thought they were a breath of fresh air. And, you know, considering the personnel that they've been down, like, I seen a thing last night, they were down nearly 10 championship starters, which is incredible. And to think of what Keith Rosser has done the last couple of weeks with the players that he has at his disposal, and, you know, all of a sudden now, you know, I'm down here in Wexford. There's a massive air of excitement down here in Wexford, and you know that's built off of some of the players that he's thrown into the mix and giving them their head. And you know, I think you have to admire even their approach yesterday, the way they were able to mix it up. They were able to go long, they were able to go short, and most certainly that has to be off the back of what David Franks is bringing to the table. We've seen it with Ballygunner, and now we're seeing it with Wexford. And you know, you even ask any of the Ballygunner lads, you know, they highly regard David Franks. And you played alongside Franks. Franks marked me. He was a tough cornerback, top class player, and it's just a great mixed there, in the Wexford management, and even the likes of Franks, you know, just how he goes about his business, you know, in a quiet way, you know, doesn't take the plaudits, doesn't look for the plaudits, and I keep banging the drum. I really, really like what Wexford are doing right now on their Keith Rosser. And you know, you go through their team yesterday, their inside line. Richie Lawler was very good. Seamus Casey was the program. You know, he scored 3 points from play. Kevin Foley got two points from play. Keane Byrne got 5 points from play. And Seamus Casey was very, very good on the freeze. The two Rex are two very underrated players. Yesterday, you know, Jamie Barron was running amok now. It was looking like he was going to win the game on his own. And then they made one significant change. They pushed Shane Rick up on Jamie Barron. Now, Jamie Barron still had an influence in the second half, but not the way he was controlling the game in the first 20 minutes. And we've seen time and time again, Shane Rick has gone and done that even on the likes of Tony Kelly. Damien Rex was excellent centre back. Matthew Hanlon came back in, was very good. And that save by Mark Fanning, an unbelievable save by off of Montgomery. And yeah, you know, on the flip side of that, from a Waterford point of view, you'd be nearly saying, Jesus, you'd love nearly Waterford to play the way Wexford are playing in regards. They're mixing it up, they're going short, they're going long. And it's very, 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 very effective what they're doing right now. And, you know, they're in a great position now to go into this weekend's game against Cork, knowing that they've a chance of getting to a league semi-final. But the big thing for Wexford right now is that, you know, they're after securing Division 1A hurling for 2025. And for me, I think right now, if you're to ask me right now, I think if they can get all their players back, all those big names back, I think they're going to have a major say in what way this Leinster Championship plays out this year.
Frank, I'll just throw it to you. John mentioned there, you know, a lot of the high-profile players that are not playing at the minute. And for Wexford to win a league game, scoring 223 without Lee Chin and, you know, confirming their Division 1 status, it kind of shows maybe what Keith Rossiter is building. He's obviously placed that hell of a lot of faith in a lot of these younger players, the likes of Richie Lawler, Keane Byrne, Connor Foley, etc. But it's a good omen for the future, probably, at Wexford as well, because, you know, Lee Chin's not going to be around forever. Matt O'Hanlon's not going to be around forever. Dermot O'Keefe, Limog McGovern, etc. It's a good sign for the here and now, but it's a good sign for, you'd say, the next 5 or 6 years as well.
Oh, very much. I mean, your question took the words out of my mouth. I was just about to go to reference the fact that 223, when's the last time Wexford scored that without not just Lee Chin, Conor McDonald, Rory O'Connor, like in, I'd say, any time over the last few years, if Wexford went into a big match without those players, you'd be seriously worried about what kind of a tally they were going to put together. And like, I'm not 100% sure, other because I only saw the highlights late last night getting back from Ennis, but, you know, it wasn't exactly brilliant conditions, scoring conditions yesterday. Definitely wasn't in Ennis. Forwards from frees and from plays were really struggling with the conditions to score. So like, to put that together is a huge thing. And obviously securing Division 1 status for next year is the big prize, I think, for Wexford out of this year's league. But if you're looking ahead, and it's only whatever it is, 5 or 6 weeks down the line, right now, if you're picking a third team to join Galway and Kilkenny, presuming those two advance, to advance from Leinster into the All-Ireland Series, like, Wexford look ahead of Dublin right now. Do you know, I mean, every time Dublin go into a match and you think, ah, this is one they're probably not going to win, they don't win it. You know, there was a time when Dublin were always capable of pulling a rabbit out of the hat. I'm not too sure if that's there anymore. So Wexford have every chance of, you know, having a big say in this year's Leinster Championship.
I think, I firmly believe now, from what I'm after seeing the last couple of weeks, and going off the back of what's to come back, I think, you know, if you're Keith Rossiter and you're David Franks, I think the target has to be winning the Leinster Championship. And I think they're good enough. I think the personnel is there to go and win the Leinster Championship. I wouldn't be just, you know, going in with the approach saying, right, lads, we'll finish in the top three and, you know, that'll be we'll be happy with that. I think they've got to think bigger than that. I honestly do. What I've seen yesterday, what I've seen the last couple of weeks, I firmly believe that they are in with a right chance of winning the Leinster Championship for 2024.
Well, the thing about Mull as well is that Galway aren't lighting it up at the minute. Kilkenny probably aren't lighting it up at the minute. Now, there'll probably be different animals come Championship, but it definitely makes the Leinster Championship more interesting anyway, because it definitely looks like it's not just probably, you know, the last couple of years been Kilkenny, Galway, Leinster finals. Maybe it looks like there could be a little bit of a fly in the ointment. Now, I will give the caveat that it is a bit early, but just go through quickly the seven teams that are going to be in Division 1A next year. This is tasty now. Clare, Kilkenny, Wexford, Cork, Limerick, Galway, Tipperary. Like, that's a tasty Division 1A. And just Mull, I throw it to you from a Waterford point of view. It's not great from a Waterford point of view to be missing out on that for next year, but in the here and now, it's not great preparation for Championship even to be going in maybe on a bit of a downer. I know you've Kilkenny to play, but to be going in on a bit of a downer that next year we're in Division 1B, we didn't perform particularly well in Munster last year. Things are going okay, I would say. But what's the mood like in Waterford in the last maybe, 15 or 16 hours?
Well, the worry for me is the attendance figures yesterday. That's a big, big worry for me. I mean, you look at yesterday, we were at home to Wexford and it nearly felt like a home game for Wexford. It was nearly a bigger Wexford following there than there was Waterford following. And the Wexford supporters were very, very vocal. You know, when they started to get on top, they got behind our team and they nearly dragged them over the line yesterday. And that's a small bit worrying. For me personally, look, I think Davey has highlighted himself. Everything is probably geared to the 21st of April. But the worry for me is that, it is a massive, massive game. And look, I can accept that everything is geared towards coming out of Munster, trying to finish in that top three, which we seem to struggle in the last couple of years. But on the flip side of that, this year will come and go and hopefully we'll have a good summer. But, looking ahead, knowing that we're not going to be in that top seven next year, knowing that we're going to miss out on some of those big games next year, preparation-wise, no disrespect to some of those teams that we're going to be playing next year, it's not going to be ideal preparation going into the Championship for 2025. Now, look, Davey and his management team will say, well, look, that'll take care of itself when it comes around. But, even yesterday, I just felt, when you were looking through the group and saying, targeting games, and that's what sometimes in the league, and you look at your fixtures before, before a ball is even thrown in, you say, right, we need to target that game, and we go after that game. I mean, it might be two or three games. And most certainly yesterday, it was a missed opportunity for me. And I think that, you got a sense that, Asher looked at it, it was kind of the mood yesterday was like, Asher, look, it doesn't really matter, whether we're in 1B or 1A next year. It does matter. And in the past, when any dressing room I've been in, whether it be Ken McGrath or Owen Kelly or Brick Welch, you always got to feel that, right, lads? There's certain games in the league say that, right, we have to go after this game. We have to win this game. And I just felt yesterday that we needed to win that game yesterday. And looking at the personnel that started the game and looking at the personnel that was on the bench and that was to come off the bench, there was enough there to win that game, to win that game yesterday. And, I firmly believe it was a missed opportunity to say, well, look, get the win yesterday, get a bit of momentum, get a bit of the feel-good factor, get the crowd behind us, knowing then that Kilkenny were coming to town Saturday and we came up short. And yeah, it is a worry. And I suppose the worry for me is that, watching the game yesterday, you were kind of, the first half was very good on the eye, and you were kind of sitting back and saying, yeah, Jesus, that was interesting. I liked what he done there. Even the performance of Jamie Barron for the first half, even the positional, the placement of Caelan Lyons up wing forward, giving him kind of a free role, I thought was very interesting. And for me and an awful lot of supporters, you're kind of second guessing, like, well, what style of play are we going with here? And only Davey and the players know what they're trying to perfect. And somewhere along the line, and I think it was Eddie touched on it there about 2 weeks ago, that somewhere along the line, when it's mid-game, when things aren't going your way, that you have to be able to adapt and have to be able to readjust to go in with something different. And that was evident yesterday where Wexford were getting on top. I mean, when there was nearly a 6-point, 7-point swing, we're 3 points down, and all of a sudden they went to, you know, 4 or 5 points up, they went 6 points up. And at that stage, you're saying to yourself, right, we need to try something different. We need to try something different. We need to, you know, the alarm bells have to ring then to say, well, look, we need to go for it now. You know, and we need to, you know, and particularly when we're going chasing the game, and we need to take the learnings from last year where we just don't continue to persist with the one way of playing. We need to be able to adapt and particularly when we're going chasing the game and just go for it and play to our strengths. What are Waterford's strengths right now? And what are Waterford's strengths going into the championship? Waterford's strengths is that we have some of the best inside forwards in the country. Desi Hutchinson, Michael Coyley, Shane Bennett, Patrick Fitzgerald, Patrick Fitzgerald. And somewhere along the line, the system that they're playing, we need to be able to build in something along the line where we can get more ball into our inside line. And that didn't happen enough for me yesterday. And even, you know, 15, 20 minutes to go, you know, we still had one up top, we two up top. The goal came from mistake. And I think that's probably something that Davey is probably going to have to look at going into the championship. And we've seen it with Wexford. Wexford were able to do it. They were able to go short. They were able to go long. And from Wexford, they were going short at the start. Next thing, they started going a bit more direct, fastball in. Started getting one or two scores. And all of a sudden, they said, right, we'll keep getting the ball in there. And I think that's what Waterford have to build into their system. And they're able to do it. The most frustrating thing is they are able to do it. We've seen it last year when against Tipperary, that when they went a bit more direct, when they had the likes of Desi Hutchinson, Patrick Fitzgerald inside and got quick ball in, the damage can be done. And I think we need to take the learnings from yesterday and the learnings from last year and bring that into the championship.
I can sense your frustration, Mull.
But it's not alone my frustration. And that's probably the frustration among supporters as well, as a whole. And this is not having a goal. Like I fully understand where Davey's come from. We can't, you know, we can't all be negative. He's 100% right. There's still an awful lot to play for. Do I still think we can beat Cork on the 21st of April? Absolutely, yes. If we get things right, 100% yes, we can still beat Cork on the 21st of April.
Okay, Frank, I know you were down in Cusack Park yesterday. We're talking about Wexford kind of building, you know, a team for the future with new players. Like Clare ended up with a very, very inexperienced team at different stages in that second half yesterday. And we're still able to get a result against a team that they haven't performed particularly well against in recent years. Just give me the lay of the land down in Cusack Park. Clare remain unbeaten.
They remain unbeaten, and it was an important win, I think, for them for lots of reasons. Leaving aside the league points and, you know, securing top flight status and all but securing a place in the league semi-finals. I just think they needed to get one over Kilkenny. After the huge disappointment of the last 2 years All-Ireland semi-finals where they lost in very different ways, you know, they needed a win, any kind of a win, I think, over Kilkenny. And the good thing about yesterday was that here was the game they could easily have lost. They were the better team in the first half. At different stages, probably, you know, they went 4 points up, were two up at the break, could have been more. But for a lot of the second half, Kilkenny were turning the screw on them in most places of the pitch. You know, Clare were seeing a lot less of the ball, and Kilkenny would have gone ahead, but for, you know, a scatter of wides they had after half time and a couple of goal chances that that came to nothing. So, like, the game is in the melting pot, 16 points each. Clare win a free. I think Peter Duggan won the free near the touchline. Ed McCarthy got it. And straight after, like, you know, in the next two plays of the game, Dermot Ryan and Peter Duggan with an absolute monster got 2 points. So they got 3 points in, I'd say, probably 90 seconds to establish that win late on. It was a funny kind of a game. It was at different stages. It was very physical. tetchy at times. You could the card count was mounting in the last few minutes. There was an awful lot of misses, but I think, you know, it was one of these tricky wins where both sets were really struggling with their accuracy at different stages. But, like, you know, Clare won a big, big match, and they did it without having had Tony Kelly or Shane O'Donnell right through the league. Mark Rogers, very, very talented hurler. He was off with his freeze early on. McCarthy took over after only 15 minutes. And look, Mark Rogers didn't have a good game at all. And yet they still, you know, they found a way. Like Keith Smith, I think he's a relatively young guy. Like I hadn't seen him before. Clipped two good points. Peter Duggan, I thought, was very good. Not just, I mean, he got a couple of scores, but like he was winning frees, winning possession out around the middle. But like Dave Fitzgerald was brilliant. 5 points for playing. It's not the first time we've seen that happen. So, you know, there was plenty to encourage Clare there, I would say.
Just on David Fitzgerald, Frank, he's turned into one of the best hurlers in the country realistically over the last couple of years. He's gone to a level of consistency now maybe that was missing in his game before. I was at the Wexford game, I think, where he also hit five from play. It's like it's nearly routine now for him to hit four or five from play. And once he gets the ball, he just is able to kind of, sometimes he takes borderline seven or eight, but he's gone away from the defender. And once he sees open ground, there is no stopping him.
Well, that's where he's at his most dangerous. And I mean, an awful lot of his scores seem to kind of come on the run, as they say. You know what I mean? He literally bursts through the tackle, finds that space. But like, you know, I think he might have had a couple of wides yesterday, but by and large, he was the most accurate player on the pitch, like but you know, it was a funny kind of game for Kilkenny. I mean, in fairness, Paddy Deegan and TJ Reid, first time we've seen them in the league this year. I thought right from early on in the game, TJ looked really sharp. You know, for a guy who's not that he's 36, that's the thing, but it's the first bit of competitive hurling he's had all year, and he was in the zone very quickly. He set up 3 or 4 points from play with just typical TJ passes. You know, like he's the best man at finding a teammate in space. You know, 30-yard pass, whatever it is. He won a couple of frees. He was just at the heart of it. And he was there late on, still going, went the full 75 minutes or whatever. Had a good chance of a goal around the hour mark. I'd say if another game into his comeback, he probably would have found the corner rather than a bit too close to Eamon Foody. But, you know, TJ was at the heart of it. He was he probably was Kilkenny's best player yesterday, which is a fair statement for a guy who's only just back.
Yeah. Just on, you mentioned, John, and Eddie's always said it as well, about, you know, circling a fixture in the league. I'd say by TJ coming back and by Paddy Deegan coming back, that this was probably a game that Derek Ling circled from a long while out. So disappointed, I'd say, from his respect, not to get a result. And it's been a funny kind of a league against Cork. You know, they're brilliant for 25 minutes, you know, then they're nearly switching off for 25 minutes. They were good at stages yesterday, but they were out of it. Awfully bossed them even in the first half of that game in Nolan Park a few weeks ago. So, I don't know, is it hard to get a read in Kilkenny at the minute, John?
Well, I say I get a good read on this weekend against Waterford, going off the back of Derek's interview in the aftermath of the match. You know, I think they'll really ramp it up this weekend, knowing that a win will almost secure a national league semi-final. Very interesting. He said that, you know, he'll be eager now to kind of get a settled 15. For me, I thought they nearly had as close to, you know, the starting 15 as they would in the summer. But he'll be eager to get more game time into TJ, more game time into an awful lot more lads that require that game time. The worry for Kilkenny and the lads highlighted last night on League Sunday is possibly number six. Do they move Richie Reid into midfield? And if they do move Richie Reid into midfield or onto the wing, who do they place in at centre back? Because, you know, that would be a worry for Kilkenny. You know, you've seen down through the years, Kilkenny always had him. Big man at number six, whether it be Brian Hogan, whether it be Peter Barry, just to name a few. And I think that's where Derek will be eager to try and shore up that area, you know, get a good solid lad in at number six.
It's just funny, on, you should say it. Yeah, go on.
Just Frank, on that briefly, Michael, it was actually interesting. At halftime, he hooked Richie Reid, who kind of struggled in one or two incidents with the pace of David Reedy, like definitely in the first half. But Mikey Carey went straight in at centre-back from midfield at halftime. And did very well. Like, we actually saw a lot less of David Reedy in the second half. But just generally, I think he, and they highlighted a few incidents on League Sunday last night where you could see Carey's physicality and athleticism coming to the fore. By moving him, they moved Paddy Deegan from wing forward to midfield. So obviously, Derek has a few decisions to make there. I mean, does he go with Mikey at centre-back again next weekend? I'd say he may well do so. Where is he ultimately going to play Paddy Deegan? Paddy Deegan is his captain. He's one of Kilkenny's most inspirational players. He was just on Friday night named Club Hurler of the Year and was on the team at centre-back where he excelled with, from where he excelled with O'Loughlin Gales during the winter. Come championship, is Paddy Deegan going to be back in the half-back line? Is he going to be midfield or is he going to be wing forward? You know, it's an interesting conundrum.
It definitely is. And it's peculiar from a Kilkenny point of view going into championship that you don't know your centre-back and you don't know your midfield pairing. And they've struggled at midfield, I would say, even the last 6 or 7 years. And it just haven't got, it's been a movable feast almost. So it'd be interesting to see what he does there. John, just a quick one for you. Have you ever been in this scenario? Tony Kelly's obviously on the way back. Shane O'Donnell is on the way back. Ryan Taylor is on the way back. I believe they did a bit of work even in Cusack Park yesterday. Were you ever in that scenario where you had an injury and you're coming back and it's a bit of a race against time for championship? What's that scenario like? Do you feel like you're chasing your tail a small bit? You want to get game time into? You want to be sharp? Were you ever in that scenario throughout your own career?
Yeah, 2006, I actually broke my wrist in a club game. I was out for 12 weeks. And yeah, get a race against time against Tipperary in the first round of the championship. Actually missed that game, but you know you're eager. You're doing all the running, but you know you cannot beat match practice. And for me back then in 06, you know, leading up to that game, just didn't have enough match practice, so I sat out that game, and it probably took me. I think we played the group stages of the All-Ireland Series that year. It took me about two, probably the whole of those group stages to probably get back up to the speed before an All-Ireland quarterfinal. So that's where those lads are at. But it doesn't seem to affect Shane O'Donnell one bit because, you know, we've seen time and time again over the last couple of years, you know, he's missed a couple of league campaigns and he's been a revelation come championship, you know.
He's a bit of a freak in that regard. I think he's a bit of a one-off. I don't think everybody could do what he's doing. But just on Saturday night, Frank, I kind of thought Tipper were going to lay the gauntlet down to Limerick, and maybe they did at different stages in the first half, but it was kind of same old. And I know you had a piece last week in the Irish Independent about, you know, John Kiely facing off against Liam Cattle and Liam Cattle's record against John Kiely managed Limerick teams. I know the scoreboard looked okay, as in they were only beaten by a point, but this was kind of Limerick in third or fourth gear again, realistically. And I just kind of wonder about, you know, potential psychological damage for Tipperary and for other teams coming up against Limerick. Colm Keyes had a stat the other night, like Limerick have won the second half against Tipperary in the last 5 or 6 seasons by more than 80 points, I think. It's phenomenal, really. Is it a psychological thing at this stage, Frank?
Well, I thought it was interesting just reading this morning, our colleague Eddie Brennan referred to it as a one-point thrashing. And that probably very nearly captured it. I mean, watching the game and you're looking at the scoreboard through that second half and you said, oh, they're Tipper back in touch, or are they really? But were they ever really in touch? And the very fact that kind of gift goal for Jake Morrissey came in garbage time, do you know what I mean? It was beyond the extra 6 minutes when they got it, kind of tells you, like, it was a very, very comfortable 4-point win. And then suddenly it became a very, very comfortable, 4-point win. Then it became a very comfortable 1-point win. I just, Tipperary kind of seemed to, there were very, very few occasions where forwards got the ball in kind of one-on-one scenarios, you know, where they in space where they could run it. I know they got 3 goals against Limerick, which is very, very unusual. You could argue the two in the second half were kind of what they were. Like, they were turnover goals. Like, they weren't in keeping with the flow of the game. But it would be a little bit worrying for Tip. I know, how much were they holding back? Have they something, what more have they to produce when it really matters come championship? I suppose that's the intriguing bit. But like, what you find with Limerick is, even when they're down several what we call team pillars, the system is still, you know, strong, almost as strong as ever. I mean, I think there were probably a couple of issues at centre back, you know, Colm O'Neill, I think, was it, you know, coming out, being turned over because he's carrying the ball too far. You know, is there someone who's going to fill the Declan Hannan role if Declan Hannan doesn't get back, because he has done it so brilliantly for the last God knows how many years. So, you know, it's not perfect from Limerick yet, but they have to be very, very content with how they're taking shape. And if they get all their main personnel back, John Kiely has some, you know, lovely headaches to ponder come championship, because the young O'Dolly guy, I've seen him in a couple of league matches in the flesh against Westmeath the last couple of years, and I thought, God, that guy looks lively. But you're thinking, okay, he's playing against a team who aren't elite level here. But, you know, against Tip on Saturday night, I think he got 3 points from play, three really good points. Brilliant assist for another score soon after, I think, for Keane Lynch. And you're thinking, like, that guy is going to be pushing close enough for a starting place, maybe at the start of the championship, whether he's there at the end. So, you know, they have options.
But their game management, Frank, is just unbelievable. You know, you just touched on it there, you know, their system, but their trust and their confidence in the process, no matter what happens while the game is going on, or if they're failing in certain areas, or if another team, or if the opposition get on top and have a purple patch for 5-10 minutes, they don't break away from their system. They trust the process, and even the players that are coming in and replacing the players that are out of the team, it's just seamless. Like, they just buy into what has to be done. And it's so hard to break down that system, and unfortunately nobody has come up with a method of play that can overcome their system. But the trust that they have, they just believe that, right, if a team gets on top, we might go through a bad spell, but they fully believe in their system and the process, and they fully believe that, right, the game is 73-74 minutes no matter what. When it comes to 73-74 minutes, we're going to be the winning team.
And you know what underlines that, John, is I mean, in the first half, Jason Ford got that goal. Next 4 points before half time, all from Limerick. Bonner Maher won that turnover in the corner, got a goal to bring Tip back level, I think, around the 58-minute mark. Next 4 points, all from Limerick. So, I mean, that just tells you about the team's mentality. Also, their trust in the system. You know what I mean? But, you know, nothing seems to faze them.
And it's funny, Frank, you mentioned about the two goals. I'd say the three of them even. I'd say John Kiely would be bullying even with the concession of three goals. And particularly the last two goals where they were in possession of the ball and end up losing the ball. So, like, they win by a point, as Eddie says, a one-point thrashing, and he nearly has a stick to beat them with going into the next game. And they can guarantee they won't be conceding three goals in the next game. Just on Tip, John, briefly, Frank mentioned it there, kind of looked like they were running out of options even quite early in the game. You're looking at 20 minutes to go and you're thinking, how are they going to get themselves back into the game? How are they going to get enough ball inside to do enough damage? Now, it was just talk of them, you know, that they were, you know, withholding, you know, a puck out strategy or something like that, or didn't want to show too much to Limerick. But Tip have been, like, they've probably been a little bit up and down. They were good against Galway at stages, but there is a bit of a worry that there's almost like a bit of a mental block maybe against Limerick, is there?
I mean, at the end of the day, Mike, this is a team that are going for, five in a row. I mean, they've any competition they played and any final they played in, what is it, 13 finals in a row, they've won. I mean, this is just an incredible team. And look, the way Liam Cattle and Mikey Bevins and his managing team just have to brush themselves down and say, well, look, at the end of the day, we're coming up against the creme de la creme. You know, they're just a formidable team. And Limerick, what Limerick done to Tipperary Saturday night, you know, the likelihood they're going to do to the vast majority of teams they come up against, unless they get caught with their pants down on maybe one or two occasions, like we seen last year against Clare and the Gaelic grounds. But no, from Liam Cattle and Mikey Bevins, I just think they've got to keep going with what they're doing, keep building on what they're doing. I think they're building something nicely there. And, you know, even go back to last year's league campaign, something similar where they kind of faded out in those last 10 or 12 minutes in that semi-final up in the Gaelic grounds. And then, you know, in the championship, they nearly beat Limerick. That was a cracking game in Turris where the game played out as a draw. So, no, I don't think Liam Cattle or Mikey Bevins will be pushing the panic button. For them, realistically, come once a championship time, they've got to be looking at beating the likes of the Waterfords, beating the likes of Cork and Clare at home. And I think that's what they're really going to home in on, you know?
Frank, I deliberately held back on talking about some of the refereeing decisions in the Kilkenny-Clare game. And I said I'd group it together with the Dublin and Galway game, where there were also some strange refereeing decisions, to say the least. Just talk me through what you were looking at in Cusack Park. It looked like it was very, very stop-start. There was a couple of frees that I just looked at some of the footage and I'm thinking, like, where is the free there? And then I looked at Salt Hill as well, and you're kind of looking at, there was a lot of bizarre enough decisions, to say the least, over the weekend.
Well, it was a really, really stop-start game in Ennis. I don't know what the final free count was, but it was quite high, and definitely some of them were very of the softish variety. I only saw the highlights of Galway Dublin last night, but it sounded like, you know, well, actually the game on Saturday was definitely reffed. The game between Cork and between Limerick and Tip was refereed differently than the match in Ennis on Sunday. And I think that's probably where the frustration comes for players and management. Now, on the flip side, I was just reading some of the comments from Henry Shefflin and Micheál Donoghue after the match in Pearse Stadium, and they're both having a pop at the referee. But in sometimes it's very easy to kind of have a pop at a referee, and maybe it's over how the match itself was refereed. But when you look at some of the incidents, itself, Conor Whelan could have no complaints about his straight red card. He reacted, and I mean, it may well have been a case that he was getting no protection in the first half. I don't know, but you know, it still behoves a player. You have to retain your discipline. You have to know what buttons you can press and what you don't do. And like, okay, it's not, maybe missing the last round of the league isn't such a big punishment. But, you know, you do that in championship at the wrong time and you'll be looking at yourself in the mirror after and saying, what did I do? Do you know? So I don't know if looking at the red card incidents in Galway, how many of them were not red cards? Probably most of them were. But I know there was a lot of frustration in Ennis, and you could feel it from the home supporters definitely at one stage in the first half, where it didn't seem to every decision going to be Kilkenny, going towards Kilkenny. And then there was a free to Clare, and there was the obligatory ironic cheer from the locals.
Yeah, it's a funny one, and particularly as you said there, like, games are refereed so differently in the league than compared to championship. It can be chalk and cheese, really, and that consistency is probably the frustrating aspect, I would say. Just Frank, you mentioned briefly about Dublin earlier. Dublin went the guts of 25 minutes without score in that game yesterday in Pearse Stadium, having got themselves in a really, really good position. I think it was 114 apiece. You could say Galway kicked on, but Dublin were unable to kick on, unfortunately. And now, you know, it's not been probably a particularly good league, you'd say, for Dublin overall, looking at the Limerick result as well. Like, where do you think they stand with Leinster only, 5 weeks away?
Well, you're looking at form at the moment. They face an uphill battle to make the top three in Leinster. I mean, they're going to have to find form, if not in a hurry, pretty quickly. I mean, look, I suppose it's not all doom and gloom. They've got Donal Burke back in the pitch the last two league matches. They've got Chris Crummy back. Danny Sutcliffe was only, I think he returned in the Limerick game as well. So they have got some important players back into the mix. But you're just, yeah, I mean, you've got to remember, they won in Antrim early on in this year's league, and they were blessed to do so. They got a scorpy goal in the last few seconds, I think, courtesy of the Antrim goalkeeper. So, I mean, that's where Dublin are at the moment. And you're wondering, can they find a level come championship where they're seriously competitive again? You know, where they can draw with Galway as they did last year, where they can finish top three, where they can go into a match against one of these better teams and say, Dublin have it within them to push them for an hour and more, at least. And we're not really seeing enough of that at the moment.
Similar, John, with Galway, obviously got the result yesterday, but we're probably not that much wiser about where they are at the minute, are we?
Oh, no, I know. Looking at them on paper now, I can slowly see they're starting to get their best 15 on paper. Even the return of Cottle Mannion. Big one for me is Adrian Toohey coming back into the back line. You know, I really held him in high regard. I thought he was a very good defender. But look, even go through their defence seems to be, their sextet of backs seems to be knitting together nicely there. Interesting who we'll go with midfield. Big test from this weekend though. Even, you know, I think it's a great test even to play Limerick without Conor Whelan, without Dottie Burke. You know, even, you know, hearing Henry in the aftermath of yesterday's match, I think he's going to be kind of up for this match, you know, kind of highlighting that it's nearly a quarter final of a National League. Big one, Johnny Glynn could be back in the fold so great credit to Henry. He's thinking outside the box. He's exploring every avenue to, you know, that if he can find anyone out there that can really go and home in and try and capture a Leinster title for him and probably overcome Limerick. But I'm really...
What do you make of that move, Mull, for Johnny Glynn? 5 years since he last played for Galway, living over in New York, coming back into the squad in, what, middle of March. There's obviously a bit of controversy about when he was retrospectively banned for that incident against Sarsfields last year. Darren Morrissey, the player in question, is on the Galway panel, and there's obviously some other Sarsfields clubmates in there as well. He must feel like he really needs something different in attack, and Johnny Glynn is something completely different.
Well, he's that outlet to go along into the full forward line, and I mean that's an unbelievable weapon to have. And I think he's looking at where they failed over the last, you know, 2 years, and probably they require probably a big man on the edge of the square, you know, and that gives. That's a great weapon to have where if you're under pressure out the field, you can just decide, well, you know what, we're just going to go route one into Johnny, you can break up the ball. And that might be for 20 minutes in the second half, that might be for the whole of the second half, you know, where the game could be in the balance. And, you know, you're at the spring a 6'6" monster in off the bench. And we've seen when he Back in the day in 2017, 2016, 2015, you know, he's a fair handful on the edge of the square. And yeah, for me, I think, you know, it's hard to know where he's at in regards to where his schedule is going to play out in the next couple of weeks, where he's at over New York. But if he's able to commit, for me, I think it's a no-brainer to get him back in there, you know?
Yeah, just a couple of other quick results that we go through. My fear that Offaly would be overran in a league game definitely materialised in Tullamore yesterday. Cork absolutely ran riot and finished 5-28-16 points. Unfortunately, when you're kind of growing and trying to develop a team, I think you'll have days like this, and Offaly and Johnny Kelly probably just need to take it on the chin and kind of move on. They've had some good stuff in the league so far. Big win for your own county, Frank Westmeath, actually. And like, I think we're going back a while, Frank, since Westmead's last Division 1 win, would be fair saying. I think we could be going back 3 or 4 decades, I think. I think I saw 1986 been floated around.
Well, I as you asked me that question, I'm looking over at Lakeside Legends, Jerry Buckley's book here, and I think I'm going to have to go through the pages to find that one out, because you stumped me. Definitely a while. I think it's an important win for them. I know Antrim are down an awful lot of players, but I saw Westmead a few weeks back against Limerick, and they gave them their fill of it for, God, over an hour, I think. You know, I mean, they were in the shake-up. You probably sensed they were never going to win it, and Limerick weren't at full strength, and Limerick were, you know, Dermot Burns, I think, had 8 misses that day alone without scoring. But, you know, they have at different stages in the last couple of years. You know, they've gone from being hammered by Galway, say, at the start of this year's league, and then they produced performance like that, where they really put it up to Limerick. And they ran Tipperary, you know, relatively close a couple of weeks back as well. So just, they're all, it's great having these moral victories. It's good to get a win every so often.
Yeah, no, it was. And like, they were very good against Limerick, very good against Tip. The easy thing nearly would have been to maybe not get themselves up for this game or something, but they got themselves up and got a big victory. And just a quick word on Carlow as well. Carlow promoted to Division 1B for next year. They continued their winning ways at a 320, the 218 victory over Down.
Well, Barry, just one last thing before we go. The ticket prices. I mean, we're particularly in the league, all right, we're seeing probably some games as a bit of a drop-off where there's not as many people going to the games. And we're seeing that, you know, particularly yesterday, particularly with games where they're being shown on TG4. You know, you even take yesterday, you had Man City and Liverpool on the box, which would have had a massive effect on crowds attending the game yesterday, particularly the Waterford-Wexford game. The GA have never had it so good, right? Particularly with the round robin coming up, the Munster and the Leinster, right? And even 2025, right? There's going to be more league games. I think what has to be factored in is that, and taken into account, I think the league games, right? I think €20 is too much. I honestly do. I think €15 was ample enough. Now, great credit has to go to the GA. The kids get in free, but you know, I think we're losing some of our audience by pricing them out of going to some of these league games. And some of these league games, let's be honest about it, are not exciting to watch. I think what I would like to see happening, and particularly in 2025, right? Say you have your top seven, right? I think what the GA are going to have to factor in next week is the cost on some of the supporters. And what I would like to see happening is maybe 2 rounds of next year's league where across the board, they have, say, after round 3 and maybe after round 6 or 7, that the gate price to get in is €10. It's just €10 to get in, and just try it and see where can we get more bum? Can we get more bums on seats? And I think just give something back to the normal Joe Soper, the normal supporter. And I think we need to entice more of the ordinary people that, you know, probably would love to go to the game, but their pocket ain't allowing them to go to the game. And I think we need to probably home in on that going forward for 2025. And even you can take the game Tipperary Limerick, all Ireland champions, right, coming to Cork, and the fact that it was taken out of the Gaelic grounds, the GAA probably should have stepped in and said, well, look, the fact that Tipperary and Bo Limerick have to travel down to Cork, you know what, we'll cap it at a tenner, and we might draw in some of the Cork crowd as well. And instead of maybe getting 3,500, 4,000, all of a sudden then they might have got 10,000 that may have went to Parky Queeve Saturday night instead of 3,000 or 4,000. And I think it's something that has to be looked at going forward for 2025.
Mull, you're the thinking man's man. That's why you're loved and revered, because you're talking to people on the ground and you know what the issues are on the ground. So I appreciate that, and I know all the supporters appreciate that.
Well, I tell you, Barry, the boys on Dáil Éireann don't know what's going on the ground, I'll tell you.
on that note, John and Frank, thanks for joining me, and we'll be back next week with another show. And in the meantime, don't forget to rate, review and follow us on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks a million for listening, and goodbye.